Hey, everybody. Welcome to Latter-day Struggles. This is your host, Valerie, and I have my favorite person in the whole world next to me. Hey, Nate.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. Glad to know where I rank.
I know, right? So we are here today, as promised, on an episode 2. This is a 3-part series that Nathan and I decided to put together to address issues of women and equality here in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We are tackling a phenomenal article, or I guess it's a book chapter, called An Expanded Definition of Priesthood, Some Present and Future Consequences. The author of this article is Meg Wheatley, and you can find this entire chapter in the book called Women in Authority, Reemerging Mormon Feminism, edited by my dear friend Maxine Hanks. And so I'm so grateful that I get to talk about this article. This is a thick, fat, beautiful, wonderful book, and we're actually going to spend about, 2 to 3 hours just on about 6 pages. That just goes to show we could do 900 episodes on this book. It's that good. But this particular chapter has been one that is near and dear to my heart. I've been wanting to do a podcast episode on this. It is one of my, it's on my list of, I think I'm up to 150 ideas. Isn't that funny? I'm only 150 ideas behind, and I get about 5 ideas a week from you all out there. Mm-hmm. And just this goes to show that we're never going to run out of something to say. We have a lot of problems, but that ain't one of them. So today we are tackling, this is the second part of our tackling this chapter. What we're talking about is basically Wheatley's chapter is discussing how organizational structure communicates values to its constituents. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has created a structure within its organization that definitely communicates value to its male and female members. If you want to go more deeply into that, how we kind of set the stage for that, jump back to the last episode. Okay, so what we're going to do is I'm going to have you, Nathan, will you give a brief overview of what we tackled in our first episode of this series?
Yeah. So in the first episode, we sort of covered this principle that the way an organization is structured communicates to the members of the organization how they are valued. And we use some examples of priesthood structure in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And the messages that it sends specifically to women when they can't hold certain positions, such as bishop or serving on a high council or being in a stake presidency, and when they do represent their organizations in a ward council or a state council, how ultimately men have veto power over the women. And so there are explicit and implicit messages that are sent to the women, which could include, but are not certainly limited to, this idea that your ideas are not fully valued, that you can't be trusted to be the ultimate decision maker on an issue, that men know more about women than women know about women. And we also kind of briefly talked about the messaging to men. When men are told implicitly or explicitly through structure that because they hold the priesthood, because they can pass the sacrament, because they can sit on the stand, it implicitly and explicitly communicates to men that you are better than women. And that can spill over into the way that men treat women in their homes and in their workplaces and in other, you know, other venues. Women are given this communication that they are less than, men are given the communication that they're more than. So it encourages these hierarchies and then goes on to create some other problems, which we're going to explore more of.
Thank you, babe. Okay, so just one or two little quotes from last episode, and I would invite you to jump back to the last episode for a full discussion of this, because we're only just touching on this ever so briefly, but I want to give a little bit of context just in case. One of the things Wheatley says is what people learn about themselves and their value to an organization is not what the organization says to them or about them, but what they are experiencing as members of that organization. So what we talked about, as we were mentioning last time, is that organizations' structure communicates value. What we're going to spend our time today talking about is how people are actually impacted by what they experience in the institution or in the organization.
So once these messages are communicated, how does that then further play out? in the lives and behaviors of the people.
Because being intimately involved in an organization, which we are, those of us who are, multi-generational members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we all know it's deeply a part of us. It's part of our identity, it's DNA deep. And what this article is communicating, and what Nathan and I absolutely noticed as we were reading this, is like, wow, this is a big deal. Because if the organizational structure communicates value, that value impacts the people. It shapes us. It impacts how we see ourselves and how we function in the larger world. Okay, so what I want to do today is I want to just start by offering to you a little bit about what Wheatley says about this very phenomenon, that we are shaped by our structures. And while this article is talking about the language she uses is connected more to sort of corporate politics and corporate structures, it translates into our church system because we are a large organization. Okay, so she says this: messages communicated by structure are far more powerful than any statements issued by corporate communications office, or in our case, by, say, for example, a bishop, state president, general authority, church magazine, etc. People, back to the quote, people cannot be told that participation is a value if four layers of middle managers must approve and act on their decisions. Close quote. So what she's basically saying here is the structure or the people in charge of the organization can say all sorts of really nice things about people inside of the organization, but if it doesn't feel like they're being valued, they can sniff out immediately if the structure does or does not value them. Back to the quote, Wheatley says this: people are quick to sense when the espoused philosophy is out of sync with the structure, with what they are actually experiencing. Close, close quote. So, in other words, what she's basically saying is that they may hear all sorts of wonderful things about their value, but they're quick to sense if this stated value is not congruent with the value that coincides with the way the organization is actually structured. She says that what they experience is some kind of cognitive dissonance. Now, this is what women said in the hundreds on this Instagram quote. We are told that we are valued, that we have profound value, that we have priesthood authority and all of these things. But what the women are saying in droves in the LDS faith is we don't feel it. It's not feeling like we have value because of the way the institution is structured. Back to the quote, she says, we need to ask what the present structure of priesthood communicates to both women and men about their abilities and potential. The fact that women, close quote, the fact that women don't have priesthood power, which is inclusive of all of the things that that leaves them out of, communicates a great deal. And then when we say or we hear the words about how valued and how equal and how beloved and how even perhaps superior women are, they feel that. They feel the incongruence. They feel the cognitive dissonance. And what women are doing right now in the LDS Church in 2024 is they are dissenting. They're saying, your structure does not align with what you are saying to us.
Yeah, and so one of the things that the church has done a little bit is to confuse some terms. And so, we say that women have access to priesthood power. And even more recently, we started saying that women have access to priesthood authority so that they act in the Relief Society in with the authority of the priesthood. Okay. And in a general sense, I would argue that every human being that is alive on the earth is acting in priesthood authority because God has given all of us our agency and our will to act. And so it becomes a little bit of a semantics game. And let's be clear on the semantics. What we have not given women is what we would call priesthood keys. The priesthood key is the right to be the boss, essentially, in a particular situation. to sit on a stand, to be a decision maker, to be the ultimate decision maker, to hand out the sacrament or to prepare it. And those priesthood keys have not been given to both genders. At least we don't recognize that they've been given to both genders. And so when somebody gets on a conference and says, oh, women have priesthood authority and women have priesthood power, it's only in the sense that, hey, we have access to everything that our heavenly parents have given to all human beings, right? I agree with that. Okay. But we're talking about power structures, people. Okay. And so to get on and say that women have the same priesthood authority, when what women are really saying is we want access to the same power structure. We want to be recognized as equal with our male counterparts in every way. That's what they're talking about.
Well, and I think it's important also to highlight and underscore that to me as a woman, it's far less about you get to do this, this, and this, and I don't get to, because I mean, honestly, there are certain things that I really don't care to, you know, participate in, but that's not what this is about.
No.
This is about equality of value.
So I'll use an example from our own family, right? I love whitewater kayaking, and I've got one son who loves it, and I got one son who doesn't. And so we're planning a whitewater kayaking trip. And I say to my oldest son, do you want to go? He says, yes. I knew he was going to say yes. I say to my youngest son, would you like to go? He says, no. I knew he was going to say no. But he knew he was invited. He knew he was eligible to come. He may say that doesn't interest me, but it's very, very different if I were to say to my oldest son, hey, you and I are going to go on a trip. And I said to my youngest son, you're not invited.
You're not allowed.
You're not allowed, yeah. Right? The outcome may be the same. Me and my oldest son are going to go. My youngest son probably won't. The outcome may look the same, but to my youngest son, those circumstances are very different. One is he knows he was invited, he was welcomed, he was absolutely considered a valuable member, and I let him choose to not go. And in the other one, I put up a barrier and says, you can't go. And the emotional experience of the second scenario would have been very damaging, very hurtful. He would have felt very isolated, left out, and less than, even though it looks the same. And this is where I think sometimes the church doesn't get it quite right. You may say the most qualified person to be the bishop in this ward is a male, but to say that it could never be a female is a very different message. It's a very different message.
Well, and what you're communicating to all males is their superiority because they're eligible for that kind of opportunity and all females are not eligible. And again, I think this is a really important, there's a really important distinction here. This is not necessarily about, we're going to go way deeper into this in our next episode. This is not about status. This is not about one's degree of importance. But what we do want to communicate is that the structure of the church actually shapes the way a person sees themselves if they spend their entire life feeling that they are either superior because of their maleness or inferior because of their femaleness. And what females in the LDS church are coming to recognize, because we live in the 21st century in a world that where equality is becoming more the norm, is they're noticing that it feels bad to be in a religious system that does not offer gender equality. And that's what this is communicating here, is that they notice that the church may say one thing, but it's not showing up anywhere else. And so there's a dissonance coming up, which is you're telling me I'm of equal value, but I don't see it and I don't feel it.
Right.
Something else that the church is, we've noticed as we've sort of watched this whole thing unfold recently, is again, the questions of semantics. I noticed with a little bit of interest that what the quote that caused all of this interest on Instagram was pointing towards was women outside of the LDS church may have authority on some level, but our authority is more expansive in the LDS church through the temple endowment. And so once again, we are causing an in-group and out-group sort of thing. We're talking about real definitions of power as opposed to artificial definitions of power.
Right.
But once again, it's a way to tell women that what they're feeling isn't relevant or isn't valid, that one must think about it in a different or more creative way so that we don't have to change the structure within the church, and we can placate women and hope that they will believe that they have power, when what the women are basically communicating is we aren't buying it.
Yeah. And her example was a bad one, because when she talks about priests and pastors in other churches, that would be the equivalent of priesthood keys in the LDS church. Okay. So she was saying in other churches, they give some women priesthood keys, but in our church, we give women priesthood authority. She was not making an apples to apples comparison. And the women snuffed that out pretty fast. Okay. If you can be a pastor in another church, then you should be a bishop in this church. That is the one-to-one comparison. And so she wasn't even making a one-to-one comparison. And it comes across, okay, I'm sure this wasn't her intention, but it comes across a little bit as using a little bit of a variation in definition of terms to gaslight people and make them feel like, oh, we do have priesthood authority, but it was priesthood keys that she was talking about in the other church. And women don't have priesthood keys in this church. They simply don't.
Well, and I think what she was communicating there was that their priesthood keys are not relevant or valid.
Yeah.
I don't know that she said that, but I kind of got the feeling that, I mean, there was kind of two things going on. It's like, well, there's only just a handful of them. So if we're just having to go by quantity of women with power,
right,
we have more aggregate power through the temple endowment than they do through their small
delegation of keys. Like our power adds up to more than their keys. It was very weird. And again, I would invite Sister Dennis to consider this particular way of looking at it. Although there may be a small percentage of women in other churches who function as priests and pastors, it is open to them. And I will go back to my reference of my youngest son who did not want to go on the kayaking trip, okay? A minority of my children are going on this kayaking trip, but they all know they're invited.
And the women in other denominations are eligible, and they get to choose based on their own interest if they want to participate. Whereas what was not mentioned is that the keys are not available to women in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So to make that comparison as if to say you shouldn't want it or need it because you already have it in this different way, what she's selling, nobody is buying.
Nobody was buying it.
Right.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate. And I think perhaps if she could go back and rethink her words after recognizing the difference and the way that women responded, because they could see the difference, I suspect that she might have worded that differently. But words matter, okay? Because we're very particular about our words in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And the difference between priesthood power, priesthood authority, and priesthood keys is clearly spelled out in our church. And the way she was using it was not in a one-to-one comparison. She was comparing our idea of priesthood authority to other churches' ideas of priesthood keys.
Well, and I think what we're noticing kind of slipping into the rhetoric in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is sort of an expanding definition of priesthood authority, right? We've even heard that in General Conference in the last few years, which is women operate under the authority of the priesthood through, say, for example, ministering or Relief Society and things like that. To me, that is their way to use words to hopefully placate the women into feeling as if what you have ought to be enough, so don't ask for anything more.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, we don't want to give the women the priesthood. We're not going to change that. At least that seems to be the stance mm-hmm. that I'm feeling is present.
Right.
So what we're going to do instead is we're going to, through the back door, tell you, you don't need it because you already have it. Whereas what you're describing is, of course, that priesthood keys is a very, very different thing, meaning that you'll still never administer. You'll still never lead. You'll still never be the final word. You'll still never actually act as equals in administering anything that has to do with the governance of the church.
Right.
And so what it's communicating is, be content with a a tweaking of the definition of power and leave us alone so that we can actually continue to do things just as we've always done them.
Yeah, and to add on top of that, because everything you said I totally agree with, but you know, if we say that the priesthood power comes from God, but you are authorized to work under priesthood authority because your bishop puts the stamp of approval on it, your priesthood authority still has to run through a man.
Yeah.
Right? Why can't the woman be the one who puts the stamp of the approval and say, yes, I authorize this in the name of the priesthood or whatever, you know, supposed authority is there. So it is all a game of semantics. Until men and women are given all the same opportunities to perform in all of the same functions and to grow their spiritual selves and all of the different capacities that this church has to offer, it is nothing more than placating semantics.
Well, and to add, yes, I agree. And something else that I think is really funny that I just was like noticing as the banter is like scaling up is that on the one hand, we have Sister Dennis saying, you don't need it, you already have it. And then on the other hand, you have a whole other cohort of women criticizing the ones who are pushing back and saying, how dare you want power? This is so vain of you, or this is so inappropriate of you that like you're just vying for power because of your pride. And I even remember somebody, I read something that was like, this is the natural order of things. God ordained man, and man basically presides over woman. So what she was indicating is that we ought not to have power, and for you to be asking for it is unrighteous. Whereas Sister Dennis is saying you don't need to ask for power because you already actually have it.
Right. And then the third point of view from the man would be, hey, I have the power. I want to keep it. Right. So, but your point is right. Okay. So Sister Dennis is saying you already have power. Stop pretending you don't. And then the critics of the women who are saying, well, then give us equal keys, are saying, stop seeking for power. Well, they say, well, wait a minute, Sister Dennis already said I had power. What I want is more authority to exercise that power with a priesthood key. I said, oh, no, that's not yours to have. That's my point. I would like to have access to all of the same rights and privileges that men have. So yes, it's crazy how people seem to be able to open their mouths without thinking through the logic of what they're saying.
And I think this is an important conversation to have, because the way we experience ourselves as equal or not equal in this organization that is so formative to us actually shapes us as women. Back to what Wheatley says, she says this: structure not only talks to people, but also helps shape them. People's behavior in organization is a direct response to their experience in the organization. We constantly change, either for good or ill, as our organizational circumstances change. We are not static individuals fixed in a repertoire of behaviors at age 21 or 30 or 50. As adults, we continue to develop, respond, and change. And it is our organizational lives which are effective predictors of whether we will be energetic, motivated individuals, or less ambitious. Okay, so we're going to just pivot a little bit and talk about how where we stand and how we feel valued in the organization actually contributes to the creation of our own human development. It impacts us as human beings if we feel valued, if we feel equal, if we feel that we are valuably contributing to our institutions. And I think this is extra relevant in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And the reason why is because, as so many of us are so intimately aware, our identity as Latter-day Saints is so incredibly deep. From birth, we are deeply integrated into our Mormonness. It's not just what we do on Sunday. It is so much a part of how we view the world, for good or for ill. And so once again, from very early in our development, especially I would say, you know, beginning really, gosh, at least the primary years, if not early adolescence, we are communicating value, and it shapes how we see ourselves as girls and as boys. Whether or not we feel valued in our institution, because our institution is so informative of our identity, it really does make a difference in our larger lives. Hello, dear friends. As you probably know, I love creating the Latter-day Struggles podcast for you. I am so committed to providing you with frequent, honest, psychologically sound content to help you find faith, peace, confidence, and direction in your faith journey. However, I need your support. The content and the demands of this podcast have made it necessary for me to give up my previous work as a private practice therapist. As a way for you to show your support and gratitude for my work, I invite you to become a paid subscriber to this podcast, which will give you access to all of the Friday episodes. All Monday episodes will continue to be free of charge because I want you to be able to continue to know what we're exploring each week here on the podcast. So, for only $9.99 a month, you will not only continue to receive the content that has been so pivotal to your faith journey, but you can also help ensure that I can continue to serve this community. Your small cumulative contributions are already making such a difference. And also, you will be honoring the dedication, education, and commitment of a female Latter-day Saint professional who is brave enough to ask to be valued monetarily for her professional contribution to her community. Information on how to subscribe, information on how to become a monthly patron through my Patreon account, and also information on how to make a one-time donation through my professional Venmo account can all be found in my show notes at the bottom of each episode. So thank you so much for your ongoing support and trust. Now, back to the show. Okay, so this is another piece that I think is a really important component of how to look at structure and value and our own human development. Wheatley says this: it's also important to clarify that when people's behavior in an institution becomes problematic, it's important to assess the organizational situation before ascribing their relative behaviors to personal factors such as socialization, gender, or race. Okay, so I feel like this is a whole big topic of inquiry that I will turn over to you for the next few minutes, babe.
Okay, so what we've pivoted on here is this: first of all, structure informs how we show how we value people. But now what we're saying is that that in turn is going to have an effect on how people behave within the organization. It's going to have an effect on how it plays out. So we're going to get into this a little bit more detail because she lays out like six or seven different ways that you can kind of see this. But people are going to be less motivated to serve, to work, to be an integral part of an organization when they don't feel valued. Also, people are more likely to speak up and to protest when they don't feel valued. So not only are they going to contribute less to the organization, but they're also going to sometimes, unfortunately, work against it. And so women have been criticized for movements such as wearing pants to church, or there was a, sort of an unofficial day that certain people in the Bay Area had asked for women to skip church in protest of removing women from the stands in the Bay Area. And you ask yourself, well, geez, why would they do that, right? Why so many angry comments on the Instagram post? Well, the answer is not because these are bad people, but the answer is because they are wounded. They've been wounded by the messaging from the structure, and they're trying to communicate in the best way they know how. We want to be seen. And because within the structure, we don't feel seen, we have to do something else. And I would argue that this is the exact same organizational principle that people like Martin Luther King Jr. and Gandhi went through when, you know, Gandhi was trying to win freedom of India from British rule. Martin Luther King was trying to win some civil rights for the African Americans in the United States. And they began to do things like boycotts and sit-ins and protests. And it's not because they're bad or trying to overthrow a government or to be disruptive, but it's because they're saying, I don't feel seen within the structure that you have put me in. And so I need to do something so that you will see me. And credit to those who do it nonviolently and say, I'm not going to blow up a car or break a window or shoot somebody. I'll do it through a nonviolent way, but I still want to be seen. And I understand that. I understand where they're coming from with that.
I think it's important for us to spend a second talking about how hard it is in hierarchies for them to look at themselves and be accountable. I mean, by definition, a hierarchical institution, whether even it be, the United States of America in the case of segregation, or a powerful corporate institution or a church, when these things happen, we could call it civil disobedience. It's really easy to say, look at those people. What's wrong with them? Why are they behaving the way they're behaving? There's something wrong with them. This is, and this is where we throw a lot of very unfair stereotypes on people for their gender, for their race, for their socioeconomic status. And we turn them into the problem rather than recognizing that we are the problem. We are the problem as the institution. And so back to Wheatley, again, she says this: when someone's behavior, I'm paraphrasing, but she says, when there's problematic behavior, we need to look at the organizational situation before ascribing these behaviors to personal factors. This is what's going on with women's equality in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I gosh, if I could get a nickel for every time I saw in the last week someone commenting on, in a very derogatory way, these awful feminists. It's like, no, these women are not the problem. They are trying to talk about a systemic issue. The structure of this organization doesn't value them, it's shaping them in ways that are hurting the development of their actual souls. And so they are protesting because it impacts them, not just on a Sunday morning. Wheatley goes on to say, from a structural perspective, the messages this structure communicates to women is problematic. Without authority to make independent decisions, even over matters of concerns only to them, without access to the major decision-making forums of the church, with fewer role choices available, and with far fewer opportunities for contributing within the church hierarchy, women's experience in the church is substantially different from and less empowering than that of men. Close quote. I want to just pause here and comment a little bit today, but a lot in our next episode, our closing episode. We're going to talk about this concept of empowerment and status. Nathan and I don't think that this is about status. We actually think, and I know that we can really get confused about this because I know that this is some of those who sort of critique women wanting equality in the church sort of tend to fall on this idea that, like, you're so prideful, why do you want power? Humble and meek humans and humble and meek women ought not to want power. That is not righteous. We're actually not talking about status and power for its own sake. We're talking about the principle of equality. It's very, very different. And we're going to go deeper into that in a minute.
100%, but
Yeah.
I just want to amen what you just said. This is not about who gets to sit on the stand.
Right.
This is not about carrying a title and running around and having everybody call you bishop. Okay.
That's all ego.
It's all ego, right? I mean, I don't think we should, right? In this particular issue, by the way, I think Joseph set a good example by saying, by asking everybody to call him Brother Joseph. I think that was, we ought to do that. We ought to just call each other by some common name. We're not talking about power, status, ego, anything like that. We're talking about treating the genders equally so that we communicate a message that everybody is valued equally. Everybody's true self is of equal importance. Everybody's skill sets can be evaluated independent of gender or skin color. And that the best candidates for leadership positions are based on your skill sets and your ability to help other people grow and not on your skin color or your genitalia or your language or your country of origin. These things just can't be the deciding factors anymore.
Okay, we're going to just go here, I guess. We'll spend a minute. We're going to definitely do this in our last episode, but I feel like this is an important time to talk about this. What we're communicating here is that if we get caught in the weeds of men have more power and men have more attention, men have more titles, men have more responsibility, we could very easily find ourselves getting caught in the swirl of false self-ego. What we mean when we say that is Nathan and I are really committed to helping you all here on the podcast, but definitely we spend time developing this idea in my small groups, which is that each and every one of us has within us an essential true self. We are each infinitely worthy and valuable in the eyes of our creators, independent of gender, independent of status, independent of weight or height or income or nationality, that there's something deep within each of us that makes us infinitely and everlastingly worthy. That is the true self. Now, everything else is the false self: title, status,
Nationality, religion, skin color, language, culture, profession. These all are things that we develop in this life as a part of getting through life and belonging to groups and kind of having a sense of community. But they say nothing about who we are at our divine origin, our divine ability to love ourselves, to love those around us, and to be in communion with the divine. And what I fear in all of this, and this is sort of kind of for me the summary of all of this, what I fear is that when we don't allow women to exercise their divine gifts in every conceivable opportunity, and when we say only men can exercise certain divine gifts in a certain place, what we are doing is not advancing the ego of the male or the female, but stifling the opportunity for the true self to grow into what it is capable of becoming.
Amen, Nathan.
And that is the difference.
That's the difference. And that's what we're communicating, hopefully, or that's what we're developing in this series, which is that the reason why we will go to our graves fighting for equality in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is because a faith tradition that doesn't give females equality is communicating something very, very dangerous to a woman and the development of her higher self.
Yes.
We are saying to a woman, you don't have equal capacity as a man.
And I hear people say things like, oh, you know, men are good at science, women are good at literature, or men are good at sports and women are good at knitting, that there's this sort of division of labor, that our true selves are equal, but, you know, different in different realms. That is not bearing out. Okay. It is true that there are some physiological differences between men and women that, you know, may show up differently in, you know, a track and field event. But when we're talking about the development of the spirit and the soul, there is no difference. And women are just as capable of being spiritual in tune leaders. And the messaging has to be, there will be a time when you get to develop that part of yourself. Because within the opportunities of this church, within the opportunities of this country, this culture, and everything, we will give both genders the equal opportunity to find places where their souls develop and grow into what they're capable of becoming, and it will not be blocked by an artificial boundary.
And I feel like it's tragic that of all the places in the world where human beings are being banned from, or certain human beings are being blocked from their psychological and spiritual development, that it would be the churches that would ban women from cultivating the fullness of who they're here to become. Because what we would hope for is that our religious traditions would say, we want each and every one of you, independent of your gender, to come here and fulfill the measure of your creation, develop skills to become a psychologically and spiritually whole person. And here are a whole bunch of opportunities in this little community where you can develop into who you are here to become. independent of your gender. Grow your true self. Allow this religious institution to be a means or a location where you can grow and develop your gifts and talents and abilities. What we're communicating right now is there is a glass ceiling for women to psychologically and spiritually emulate their God-given gifts in the institution where there is not that glass ceiling with men. And so that's why this matters to us, not because we think women need more status or prestige, or I don't want to actually use this as a forum or an excuse to integrate women more into their false self-identity.
Right.
That is not what this is actually about.
Right. I'd rather tear down the false self-identities that men have already developed than to, you know, say we're going to put women into that.
I want everyone to extricate themselves from the potential to use the priesthood as a means by which the false self is strengthened.
Yes.
So quite honestly, if I had my way, I would say, no, not the women. I would say rather than giving the women the priesthood, if what it's doing is actually integrating them into a false self system, I would say, let's take this false self identity away from all of the genders and help men and women learn how truly to become the body of Christ, where equality and service amongst both genders is what is emphasized and reinforced. Here's a final quote from Wheatley that I think is a beautiful way to close this episode. She says this: "We must wonder whether an organization which believes in the perfectibility of its members and teaches that we are all equal in the sight of God should feel content with a structure which communicates such disparate messages to men and women. We need to be concerned about these disparities of opportunity." Final thoughts, Nathan, as we close this episode up and jump deeper next episode into how women are deeply impacted by not having opportunities to cultivate the true self.
Yeah. So again, this is not about ego and power. Okay. Going back to your comment of, you know, we would love to actually tear down the ego and the power that the priesthood has created in some men, I think is a probably a nice summary. Every organization has to have kind of a leader. We all get that there has to be leadership, okay? But we've got to make it where that leadership is accessible to everyone, and that the opportunities that come with leadership and the growth and development that come from that are accessible to everyone, but not make it about the titles, not make it about sitting on the stand, not make it about someone has the ultimate authority to rule or overrule or whatever, but make it about the way Jesus Christ led, which was by example, by kindness, by inclusion, and having these opportunities for everybody to feel included. Everybody can participate. Everybody feels loved. The ego sort of melts away. The ego part of it melts away when I no longer feel like there is a hierarchy or a structure or some sort of superiority associated with this thing.
Well, and I think the structure as it stands actually lends itself to the cultivation of the ego. Two reasons come to my mind right off the bat. Number one is that I think if women were integrated into the system, what we would actually notice is something is the shift away from what's typically connected with patriarchy and hierarchy, which is the desire for promotion, the desire for attention, the desire for respect and admiration, and sort of this masculine tendency to be more interested in outcome and product as opposed to process. So what we're looking at, again, I'm not talking about male and female. I am talking about innate characteristics of masculinity and femininity. And if femininity is more integrated into the structure, we would probably notice some of the melting away of some of the false self-identity of church culture and structure of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Amen.
Okay, let's go ahead and close this episode up. What we're going to talk about in our final episode of this particular series, we're going to be analyzing five major categories of behavior affected by lack of opportunity in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And so what Wheatley is doing in this paper is she's basically talking about and summarizing how women are impacted, how their development, their personal and spiritual development is impacted by their inability to participate in the cultivation of their true self through their service in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. When a woman is not given the opportunity to grow and thrive and actually expand her spiritual gifts because of the glass ceiling of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, it does matter. It impacts her development and growth. And we're going to break those things down and really go deeper into that. So let's go ahead and end things off today. Thank you all so much for being here. We really, really appreciate your support and want to thank you for your ratings and reviews. If there's anything that we can do for you here on the Latter-day Struggles platform, whether it be through a package of consulting with me, some ongoing coaching with my team. If you're interested in participating in my once a month Wednesday evening Latter-day Night Live series that is complete with a live presentation and a digital workbook that you can do at your own pace, please jump into that on latterdaystruggles.com. Take care and have a good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dialogue Podcast Network.